Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another RNIB Tech Talk, our weekly look at all things technology related from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with the show, our email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We always love any comments or questions or anything you want to share with us. Get in touch. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we hear about a project that aims to use accessible technology as a tool for empowerment. We'll have news about plans for this year's Sight Village Scotland that will be making its way to Glasgow later this month. And Jackie tries out the Zoom Podtrack P4 Next audio recorder that we've been talking about quite a bit lately, so I'm looking forward to that one. Jackie is with me this week as well, as are Hubert Pavalkovic and Natalie Curran. Welcome to all of you. I'll start with you this week, Jackie, then. Apart from the Podtrack, what else is going on?
There has been a new announcement from Selvis, formerly Hims, about a new note taker that's coming out and going to be demoed at CSUN. So this is going to be called the Braille Sense 7, and it is apparently coming out in three flavors. So there'll be a 20 cell, a 32 cell, and a 40 cell Braille display on these devices. And seemingly one of them, which I'm guessing is the 40 cell version, is going to be a QWERTY keyboard, as opposed to the other two being Braille input keyboards. And apparently they are going to have Android 15 on this set of devices, and also they're going to incorporate Google Gemini as the AI model. So how that's going to work, I'm not quite sure. It's a bit disappointing, I suppose, in a one way, that they're sticking with Android, because we're already on 16, and by the time the Braille Sense 7 comes out, we're going to be on our way to Android 17. So it just feels that they're already behind, as opposed to HumanWare. I suppose the Evolve is going to be Windows 11 Pro. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see, but that's all the information I have at the moment, and hopefully there'll be stuff coming out of CSUN about what these devices can do and when you can get them and all the rest of it.
Interesting about Gemini, though, because obviously that is part of Android, so you would expect that, but because these devices, like we've said before, they do target employment and mainly education, really. So I guess that in a way could help it keep up to date. Like it won't keep up to date in terms of security and new apps and stuff. They will go eventually, but if the AI can sort of do a lot more of that modern stuff in the cloud, if that makes sense, that could help it, I guess, get a little bit more life out of it.
Yeah, I think that's maybe their thinking. I mean, I don't know, because we don't have very much information at the moment. It's really like a very vague press release that this is coming, and I dare say that companies like Sight and Sound will probably interview Jenny Axler. She normally is the spokesperson for Selvis or Hims, and she will probably be on a future webinar podcast talking about it. So we'll know more probably in the coming months. But it's an interesting one. As a devoted Braille person, I'm looking forward to seeing, having some hands-on, but what it's going to offer that current devices don't offer, I'm not quite sure.
Okay, interesting. Well, it is a little bit of speculation from us at this point, really, in terms of features and stuff, so we will definitely keep an eye on that one. Hubert, anything new with you this week?
I've been trying out an interesting app called WikiTrip, which is powered by Wikipedia, and the way it works, I think, is quite clever. It uses your location and plays you AI audio voiced articles which are about your location. So as an example, when I was at the RNIB Grimaldi building, which is on Pentonville Road, the app came up with an article about, well, the history of Pentonville Road, because this is where I was, and played me the article in a fairly decent AI voice. They have higher quality voices. Of course, you'll have to pay for them or subscribe. However, I thought it was quite interesting. And if you don't stop the app, it will keep playing articles about places within your location and things within your location, which I think is quite an interesting way to explore where you are. And also, if you're, for example, on in a car on the road trip or something, or on a train, if the signal actually is good enough, you can explore where you are in a bit of a different fashion, which I think is quite interesting.
That does sound pretty cool, actually. And like you do quite a lot of traveling, so I can imagine you're getting a lot of good use out of this.
It's quite interesting because you never know what article it will bring up, and you know, you can learn all sorts of interesting things depending on where you are. And so far, like I said, the free voice isn't actually too bad either. So, you know, I've not really paid any money towards it yet. But I find it's a different way to travel.
Yeah, it does sound cool. It sounds a bit like having a travel guide in your pocket. And for once, for the vision impaired community, it does actually fit in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, those pocket dictionaries from school that were actually 30 odd volumes long and took over my bedroom, never mind my bookshelf. So
yeah,
that does sound cool.
It is really nice. And I'm heading over as of this recording, when we record this, right, I'm heading over for a weekend in Manchester. So I'll put it on the train and I'll see what it brings me, if signal works, of course.
Well, we're going on a cruise in a few months, and I feel like I will try this, because the bit that I like about this is that you just keep it running and it will keep going as you want. And to be fair, this is, just to be clear, this is giving you general kind of information, like maybe historical information about the place. This isn't going to tell you, this isn't navigation. It's not going to tell you what's around you, but...
No, it is powered by Wikipedia. So it's just general Wikipedia articles which are based on something within your location. So no, it won't give you directions or anything. Might give you a few interesting facts, though.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I'm going to give that a try. Natalie, what have you got for us this week?
Well, to be fair, I'd forgotten about this, but then Hubert reminded me when he mentioned it, that WikiTrip app is a very small thing that I wasn't going to talk about this week, but I'll mention it whilst I'm here, is on the iPhone Find My app. If you have friends or family on there that are sharing their location and you want to see where they are in more detail or see how far away they are from you, you can actually just click on it. And if you click on it, it will then open up sort of a few more options. And then if you click on it again, it will open it up in Apple Maps. So you can actually then get a description of, you know, they're 10 minutes away driving, they're 20 minutes away walking, or whatever it is. And I mentioned it just because as a family a few years ago, we went to Live 360. But one, I was quite worried about sort of the security of that, and two, the accessibility of it's really glitchy. It's not fun to use if you're having to use voiceover. So I've been trying to persuade everybody to move across to Find My, and I thought, oh, that's quite nice. I can still have that. So I know that's something the rest of my family liked about Live 360, is they could track how far away each other is. But now I've seen you can do it with Find My. Like I say, it'll link to Apple Maps. I know not everybody uses Apple Maps, but I do quite like it.
Yeah, I quite like Apple Maps, to be fair. I do use Find My, but I find it a little bit clunky, to be honest, that app.
I do a bit too.
If you get stuck in that sort of map view at the top, the only way you can get out of that is explore by touch, I think. And it's really, I don't know, it's just really sort of a bit, it just seems to go a bit all over the place, really, especially for a native Apple app. I mean, it is good when it works, but yeah, I just find it a little bit of a mess, really, sometimes.
I've never gotten stuck where you've described. I have thought at times I'd expect it to be a bit better, but I don't know if maybe this is one of the more recent updates that actually Apple are trying to improve it, because tracking apps, I think, are actually seeing a bit of an upsurge in people wanting to check that family and friends and children are okay.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where that came from. The other thing that I was actually going to talk about before Hubert reminded me of that was an app called Mobile Connect. And it's some people might remember a few months ago, I think in the lead up to Christmas, and potential for people to be going to pantomimes, is that different theatres can give you different types of headsets for audio description. And some of them I prefer and some of them I don't. And it just so happened that a couple of weeks later, I went to the pantomime and I wasn't given any headphones at all. They told me to download this app, connect to their Wi-Fi, and then I could plug in my own headphones or earphones or AirPods or whatever device I use to listen to my phone and listen to the audio description that way. And I have to say, I really liked it. It was a very straightforward app to use, nothing fancy going on. The audio description came through nice and clearly. I could control it all happily because it was my own phone, my own device that I was using. And I had earphones that I liked the feel of. I didn't have to compromise with whatever ones the theatre happened to decide to give me. But I did think it did mean potentially to warn people that maybe have a spare set of headphones if you don't normally carry them with you. I think most visually impaired or voiceover users do. But bring them with you in case that is a theatre setup. Like I say, I very much enjoyed it doing it that way, and I've never done it that way before.
I've heard a lot about these apps, but I've never really heard people using them. So it works well, does it?
Well, this one does. I mean, I've come across others where it's like you go around, you download an app and you go around a museum and it tells you everything that's on display and stuff. And I've never sort of fallen in love with those because I kind of think by the time you've downloaded the app, everybody else is halfway around the museum without you.
Yeah.
It will describe absolutely everything to you, whereas most people only look at the odd thing, and it's just, I think it's a good idea, but it still needs some refining. Whereas this, like I say, it was very straightforward. It was download the app, connect to the Wi-Fi, go back to the app, and hit play. They couldn't really have done much more to make it easier to use.
And like you said about headphones, you could literally use any headphones that you want. I mean, I've pretty much always got my AirPods in my pocket just because they're small and just convenient to carry around. So you could just, I'm guessing you could just stick them in or one of those in and,
Exactly, because it's just your phone. Whatever you use to listen to your phone will work. And like I say, I thought it's such a small thing, but I really enjoyed that.
Well, to be fair, I don't know if it is a small thing because I don't know if I've told this story before. I know I've told it off air, but not long after me and Jess got together a few years ago, me and her family went to the cinema to watch a film, and they gave us the audio description headset, but then it was that dreaded moment of like the film starts and you're sort of waiting for it to kick in. You're sort of sat there, you're waiting. The longer it goes on, you're sort of thinking, you're just getting that static. And you're just thinking, this isn't going to work, is it? So I didn't say anything because, not long been together, one of the first times meeting her family, I didn't want to make a fuss kind of thing. And we sort of sat there and I'm messing with the headphones trying to get it to work. And I think that was a pretty big giveaway that it wasn't working. So her dad. It's a typical sort of person that he is. Her dad was like, "Right, this is not good enough. I'm not having this." He went and complained to him. They couldn't get it working, so they said, "Look, we're really sorry. We'll give you some free tickets." So we got some free tickets. So then a few months later, me and Jess went back to watch a film, and it still wasn't working. But we'd paid with the free tickets, so we went and complained. They said, "Right, okay, look, it's not a problem. We'll give you free tickets." And then they looked at our booking and, "Oh, you already had free tickets." We said, "Yeah, because we had the same problem last time as well." And they went, "Oh, well, we'll give you the free tickets anyway." So just exchanging free tickets. It was brilliant, yeah. But no, it's anything to get away from, because usually the way they do it is like a little box at the back of the room somewhere, and it's like a, I don't know what it uses. I think it's like an FM type connection or an RF type, but it's not great really. You've got to sit in exactly the right position and it's pretty staticky and
I do find the difference between sort of a more modern cinema, and an older cinema is that the if a more modern cinema, you tend to have more audio description options because they've fitted it in more of their screens. You don't tend to have to sit in such a funny angle or get it just so. I do think I've certainly noticed a big difference between cinemas that have been built, say, in the last 5 to 10 years versus ones that are 10 years plus.
Well, definitely worth a try is that one, if your local theatre or cinema supports it. I know this won't work for everyone, like having to bring your own device, but I quite like personally that it's going down this route. Hopefully, yeah, makes it a better experience. Well, a bit of a quick one from me this week, and I say only a quick one because I've not had a chance to play with this yet because it's just coming out the day that we're recording this, but I've spoken a couple of times before about Lisi. These set of scripts essentially for Jaws that kind of enhance some of the features and add a few little productivity boosts. They have been on version 10. Version 11 is now out, which sounds pretty cool. It adds a bit more features to the ChatGPT integrations that they've got. So you can now upload, rather than just doing sort of text and prompts and proofreading, you can now upload actual documents, like full documents, to it. And it's got like a Q&A feature, so you can upload a document and get it to provide a direct summary or ask questions and then ask follow-up questions to it. So that sounds pretty cool. And it's the sort of thing you can do on, say, the ChatGPT website anyway, but just pulls it into a more kind of just a more accessible environment, I guess. So that sounds pretty good. It's also got a feature that allows you to capture table data more easily. So we've all had this sort of pain in the backside where you've got a table and it's maybe not formatted properly, or it's a huge table, but it's not got any column headers properly marked up. So it's a bit sort of, right, okay, what's this row again? Where am I up to? So there's dedicated.
Yeah.
It's one of these things with Lisi, you read it and you sort of think, okay, yeah, that's fairly, yeah, that's pretty nice. But then you actually start, like I said, I haven't used it yet, but you actually start digging into what it can do. And it's just like, yeah, this is pretty big. So dedicated key commands really for capturing the table data, so capturing the entire table or an entire row or an entire like set of. You can pretty much be as flexible as you want, really, with how much you capture. And it will bring it into what they call the buffer, which is like this plain text view. And you can view all the data in there. You can choose how it's separated, how it's formatted. And then you can take other actions with that. So you can copy it directly from the buffer, so you know it's going to copy in an accessible way. And then, of course, it's just copied, so you can do whatever you want with it from there. Really, really nice. I haven't got the update yet, but I'm looking forward to having a dig into that. Well, another packed week for us this week, as always. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
We're going to hear today about an ambitious vision beyond horizons. It's focusing on many, many things, but today we're just going to look at one of the projects that they're working on at the moment. It's all about empowering blind and partially sighted people with accessible technology so they can compete with sighted people on the same level and also improve their own opportunities in life. Joining us now to tell us a bit more about this project and the work of Beyond Horizons is Mohamed Valli, also known as Mo, and you might also recognize him as Blind Freedom on his YouTube channel. Mo, it is great chatting with you today.
Oh, thank you for inviting us on such a mega show. Yeah, listen to it. It's fantastic. Brilliant. Thank you. It's a pleasure as mine to be on the show. Thank you.
Now, Mo, how did the idea for Beyond Horizons come to be? It's obviously such a big project. It's such a vision, as you call it.
Well, it's a combination of things. I myself, I'm blind. I've been blind since the age of two. I've got RP, very unique form called macular degeneration, which means that unlike most people with RP who tends to lose their sight later on in life, I basically lost most of my sight when I was 2 years old. And by the time I was six, seven, I totally lost it. So it's my own experience in life. Beyond Horizons is literally, there should be nothing stopping you leading an absolutely normal life, not a blindy life. You know, blindness is something to be cherished. It's not something to be despised. And I want all these blind people to love being blind, yeah, because that's one of the things. So it's a combination of all these things. There's the tech here as well. People are making huge amount of money on tech for blind in this day and age. It's not like that. There are so many apps, but a lot of people are not aware of these things. I mean, there's a whole load of things out there and people don't know where to go. So they fall into this trap of, you know, buying something off the shelf, which is ridiculously priced. Yeah. And I can understand it, why things are expensive, because blindness is a niche market. And if someone's going to go create a product and invest all that time, they're going to charge for it. Right. So I'm not saying that it's wrong, but there are alternatives. And this is what I want Beyond Horizons to kind of show people that, hey, there's an alternative. Then there's that guy, that person who's been sighted his life and now he's losing his sight. And he's kind of disengaging from his existing life, you know, and you naturally start leaving the things that you love because you can't participate anymore and it's so depressing. So you kind of end up in this hole of your own. And again, Beyond Horizon wants to be there to hold the hand and said, you know what? It's not the end of the life. It is, you're not even going to lose anything from your life. It's just a transformation from one format to another format. Yeah, you can have everything you love in life still. You can still enjoy the life to the maximum potential. There are plenty of things you can achieve. It's just in a different format, right? And to hold that person's hand from when they go into the ophthalmic unit, which is going to tell them that they're going to go blind or they've already gone blind, to you know, introduce them and welcome into the blind world. So these are some of the elements of the Beyond Horizon vision.
It's a very ambitious project, and today we're just going to focus on something really exciting you're working on at the moment, because you've recently received a grant to carry out this pilot scheme. It's focused on technology and empowerment. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, absolutely. So there are blind people who use tech in a most fluent way, but there are also quite a big portion of blind people who are just using the very, very basic stuff. I mean, yes, I think phone is the most popular. People can kind of use it to a certain extent, using VoiceOver or on an iPhone or TalkBack on an Android. And then some people can use PCs as well, using either JAWS or NVDA, but not to a level where I can say, do you know what, you're sighted. I'll tell you what, let's have a race who can do this thing the quickest on a PC, on the phone, right? And yeah, the tech is there to enable that, but I think a lot of people just don't know how, or just not being taught it in the right way on all of these platforms. If you know your tech well enough, you can absolutely do things twice as fast as, well, maybe not with twice, one and a half maybe, than a sighted person using their mouse and clicks and whatever they do. Yeah. And this is what this project's about. So it's to take 10 to 12 blind and low-sighted individuals and put them through a program, like a 12-week program. We'll have a mixture. We'll have some people who probably already have a bit of knowledge of tech and some people who won't. The aim is to transform them so that they have sufficient skill, I'm confident to say, that would be good enough for them to actually go into some kind of employment.
And that's makes so much sense, because I believe currently the employment figures are so depressing. I think it's still 1 in 4 vision impaired people of working age. That's obviously so low, and as you said, empowering them with accessible technology could help so much.
Absolutely. To give you some stats, only 27% of blind people are in any form of employment. That is compared to 54% with people with other forms of disability, right? And out of that 27%, you've got some individuals who are kind of self-employed and doing some bits, usually in the blind world itself. And then you've got majority of that 27%. So about 70% of that 27% are working for some kind of a disability organization, whether it's a charity, whether it's RNIB itself or something, or in a role to do with blindness. So the amount of people who are in normal employment is only 30%. And then out of that, I would say about 90% are kind of doing jobs which are just basic jobs. And then you've got that elite kind of 1% or less than 1% who are kind of doing a what I would call a job where they are blind and they're managing, sighted people, maybe 100, maybe 50, maybe 350, and totally blasted through that blindness label. It's a very small number.
It is, and it's absolutely shocking. So I love your approach here. I would love to hear a little bit about the participants themselves. Are you still going through the process of choosing people? Will there be an age limit? Is this open to people from a specific area? I imagine you want people to be available to be in the pilot in person.
Yes. The grant only got approved. I think you're one of the first people to find out about it just very recently. We're going to be kickstarting the project probably about March, April time, early April probably. Currently, we're in the planning stage, getting all the logistics started. But in terms of the age group, I want a wide age group. I want to, have people who are potentially going to doing their GCSEs to A level, that kind of age group, all the way to, somebody who's retired and using phone and technology just to do their day-to-day things. So I want a whole range because the skill sets and the areas of interest for that whole range will be slightly different. So I want to put the whole thing for the pilot. So it's not going to be focused just on the young people or just the old people, the whole range, because there are different set of skills, like I said, that are involved to meet their needs, basically.
And what is your hope for, I guess, the next stage? Let's say you went through the pilot, it was very successful, you had your participants, you have your findings and your results. What's next for Beyond Horizons?
So hopefully this particular project, I want to then go and secure some wider funding, maybe lottery grants or something, to trying to roll this thing out across the UK, make it available to as many people. But also what we're doing, although because this is a pilot and we want to see reactions, we want to capture everything on video and all this kind of stuff, because we're also going to make the videos available. So you don't have to participate in it. You don't have to be there in present, although my group of 12 will be, but each of these sessions will be fully videoed. So even somebody from far afield can hook onto the YouTube and follow it along and gain exactly as much as anyone who's at this session will. And then we'll also be having session online, right? So if anybody following us remotely have any specific questions or struggling with something, then we will have various sessions just to support the online participants.
It sounds absolutely amazing, Mo. And for those 12 participants that will be there in person, are we looking at the Greater Manchester area?
We are looking at Grimm. So Manchester. Well, I think at the moment we're thinking it's going to be, because what I want is, I don't want people just to come to session, and then end of the 12 weeks, they've kind of, well, what have you learned? Well, okay, they know how to switch a computer on, but that's about it. Yeah, I don't want that. So I want to give sufficient time between sessions. So we're looking at the moment sort of 2 weekly sessions. So that kind of give people time to do the exercises that we're going to be set in, because we want to make sure that what they learn, what they pick up, is cemented in their brains. Yeah, the way it's designed is that everything builds on top of each other. So you cannot succeed lesson three without using everything that you've learned in lesson one and two, right? So it's going to be like a structured in that kind of way. So there's no opportunity for someone to do something at the start and by the end of the course they've kind of forgotten that bit. So we want to give at least 3 weeks so people can do a lot of practice and do the exercises and get really comfortable. People are very scared when you they have to do something outside their comfort zone. So I want to allow that whatever is outside their comfort zone becomes in their comfort zone. So then they're not kind of scared or frightened of kind of just said, you know what, I'm going to press these buttons, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and it works, you know. So that's the whole aim.
It sounds like you're building in enough time so the participants can really grow in confidence, which I feel like maybe that's a big barrier for someone who's maybe gone through sight loss later in life, is they feel like their confidence is gone and trying to build it back up and learn new ways of using technology feels so overwhelming.
Absolutely, absolutely, and some of them, and that's why they don't bother. I know so many people who've lost sight in there, and they are very, very intelligent people. And you know what? It literally hurts my heart, right, to know that, hey, you know, this guy is so intelligent, right? He's so witty, so smart, but yeah, he can't take that step, or she can't take that step to just learn the tech. But you know, obviously I lost my sight from a very young age. You know, some people would say that that's fantastic, and some people say, well, no, because you know there are people who've gone blind later on in life, and they say, I'm glad that I had my sight earlier in life because that allowed me to build my business or whatever, which I don't think I could have done otherwise. I mean, I know it's just kind of debatable, but I think the other way around that no, it's a lot easier to, you know, do things if you blind from a young age, because you don't have to then go through this uncertain period where you're vulnerable, where you're kind of going through that change. You know, you don't have to go through that at important points in your life. You know, you can just well, you just okay, it might take you a year or two or maybe three to accept that, hey, I've gone blind. But once you've gone over that initial thing, then the world is your opportunity.
Yeah, and I feel like as much as we're saying we're learning new skills in this case, you're also unlearning how to do things in the old ways that don't work for you anymore because you don't have that vision anymore. Well, Mo, for anyone who is listening and would like to find out more information, what's the best way to get in touch?
At the moment, Beyond Horizon hasn't got, we've not even yet put a web page up for it, but we've got obviously GMViz, which is our sports element of the Beyond Horizon vision. So those email addresses are there. We've got a YouTube page, so people can reach us on there through email. And I think our telephone number is there as well. What would be really good is when we're about to launch this thing and it's planned, then I think it'd be really good to have a session, because at that point we'll have all the logistics and everything in place. So if any of your listeners want to partake in the program, you know, they'd be absolutely welcome to.
Brilliant, Mo. Well, we'll keep everyone updated with that information. And obviously, if you're listening and you would like to get in touch with Mo and we can help out as well, our email is radio@rnib.org.uk. Just get in touch. We'll put you in touch with Mo very easily. But in the meantime, Mohamed Vali from Beyond Horizon and also Blind Freedom on his YouTube channel. Thank you so much for speaking on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being on the show.
For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
I would not allow a book of mine to be published if there wasn't an accompanying talking version.
Well, there's no way I'm going to let someone else read my books because I'm a performer and I wanted to do it.
On RNIB Connect Radio, we take you inside the world of audiobooks. with author interviews, chats about brand new releases, and plenty of listening recommendations along the way.
It can be hard to keep up with all the great new books entering the Talking Books library, so here are two new gems.
Each week, we talk to the writers behind the stories, explore what's new in audio, and share books that have caught our ear.
Oh, I love that. I haven't heard someone say that before, but I think you're right.
New episode every Friday at 1 p.m. with repeats over the weekend and always online as a podcast. Just search for R&IB Read On in your favourite podcast app.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Today I'm going to be reviewing the Zoom PodTrack P4 Next, which is a smashing little recording device. And for those of you who haven't heard of Zoom before, we are not talking about the Zoom Corporation, who provide the platform for hosting conferences and meetings. We're talking about the Zoom company in North America, who produce a range of recorders, and they are very high quality recorders as well, I might say. But over the last couple of years, they have introduced accessibility features in some of their recorders, not all, but some of them. We've talked on the program before about the Essential Recorder series. The Essential 1, the 4 and the 6 came out first, and then they were followed by a couple of other recorders. And recently, Zoom has released the PodTrack P4 Next. Now, there was a PodTrack P4 that came out in, I think, 2020, but it had no accessibility features in. So that's why this one is called the P4 Next. So if you want to buy this recorder in the future, be sure to make sure it is the PodTrack P4 Next that you want, because that has the speech facilities accessibility built into it. Now, I'm going to take you round the recorder as a first step and explain what it is and what it does and obviously what it can't do. If you want a full and really in-depth and very well presented review of the PodTrack P4 Next, then I suggest that you listen to Jonathan Mosen's excellent review on the Access On podcast, which you can download. And there is also a PodMaker podcast as well that you can subscribe to, and it's on there. There are a couple of people bringing out reviews of this recorder now because it is really good. But if you want an in-depth one where he demonstrates it literally, then please do download the Access On podcast, which is Jonathan's NFB podcast. So, without further ado, I'll tell you I'm recording from the PodTrack P4 and I'm using a Samson, that's S-A-M-S-O-N, not to be confused with Samsung, but I'm using a Samson Q2U microphone. It's an XLR and I have it in to the input of the number one channel. This recorder can record up to 4 channels, and you can use XLRs as well to use that for recording. The other thing to note here straight away is that this recorder doesn't have an internal speaker, so you do need to use headphones when you're setting it up and recording. And also, it doesn't have a built-in microphone, which is why I'm using this microphone that I've had a little while, and I use it for recording purposes. And it's, as I say, on XLR input number one. So now I will tell you all about the actual recorder and what it's like. It's a small square box, and at the rear end of it, it does kind of slope a little bit When you place it on a table, it sort of slopes forward a little bit. So it's sort of slightly risen at the back rather than at the front. So if I say that the knobs of the recorder are nearest to you, that would be the best way of describing it. So I'm going to take you along the top edge. On the top face, there's a lot of really tactile buttons and knobs on this recorder. When I first looked at it and I thought, my goodness, how am I going to get around this? But actually, it is really dead simple if you're into your recording. So on the top face, from left to right, going across the first set of buttons, we've got the power button and it's slightly recessed. So you would have to press it and hold it for a second or two for it to come on. And it isn't something that you're going to likely bump because it's slightly recessed. The next button going across is a long rectangular rubber button, and it's larger than the rest, I would say. And this is your record button. So you would press to stop and start it, and it does bleep when you press it, so you would know. It gives one bleep when it starts recording, and if you stop it, it gives two bleeps. Then the third button is a round button in the top right corner going across, and this is your play pause button. And you would do that when you're listening to files, when you're playing them back. Now, the next row of buttons are split into two sets of four going across horizontally. So the left set of four are your sound pads, 1, 2, 3, and 4. When you are in a different mode, i.e. playing back, they will change to a different option. Then in the middle, you separating these two sets of buttons, you have a small screen. And then next to that screen on the right are the next four buttons. Probably these are quite important because the left of these four buttons is the menu button, and the next three buttons control the menu up and down buttons and the confirm button, but they do something else when you are in playback mode. So those eight buttons that go across, they're smaller, they're little rubber, I would say, oblong sort of shape buttons, but they all do different things depending what mode you're in. But it's not difficult to find out what they do, and it's not difficult to maneuver them, you know, to use them. The next set of four buttons that go across the unit, and I'm coming towards myself now because it comes towards you, there are again four buttons, but these go right across, and these are your mute buttons for your microphones. So I don't have the first one to the left muted. It's off because that is the channel that I'm recording from. But the next three are all muted. And if you mute and unmute them, you will be told by the voice. It tells you whether the button is muted and what number it is. Then going down still towards me, you have four larger round knobs actually, and these are your mic inputs, and again they correspond to the little buttons just above them, but these are your mic gain buttons, and you have got a fair amount of gain with these. So again, I've got three of them turned down, but the first one is turned up for this recording. And then finally, at the front edge on the top, you've got four volume buttons for your headphone gain buttons. These are for your headphones, so you can choose how loud you want the headphones to be. And again, I've got the other three turned down, and I've got number one turned up because I need to hear the headphones through my ears, obviously. And then at the very front edge of the unit, you've got four 3.5 ports for your headphones to go into. So again, I've got a set of headphones going into the first input jack, and the other three I don't. On the left-hand side of the small box, as I call it, the PodTrack P4 Next. At the very back is a phantom power switch. If you push it towards the back, it's on, and if you push it to the front, it's off. And then you have a little square indent where your micro SD card cover is. And I've got a 256 micro SD card in here, but you can go up to, I think, a couple of terabytes. So it depends how much you want to record, but that's where your micro USB goes in. And then further forward, you have two USB-C ports. The first one is for a power supply. So if you don't have any batteries or you've run out or something happens, you can plug in a USB-C power supply in that. And then just in front of that, at the front, is a USB-C port, which is a data port. So you could connect your PodTrack to your PC, or you can plug in something, you know, to go to a different device if you want to, an external device. On the right hand side at the back is a switch that, if you are using input number 4, if you push the switch away from you, it's off. And if you push the switch towards you, that is where you will get connection to your iPhone if you plug in the relevant cable. And I'll tell you a little bit about the cable in a second. And then you've got a couple of headphone sockets at the on the right side further forward. And these are to do with your Bluetooth adapters that you can plug in. The one furthest away is to plug the USB Bluetooth adapter in, and the one at the front, if you plug a cable in there and you plug the other end of it into your phone, for example, then you would, if you listened on input number 4, you would get your phone coming through there. And it would mean that if you were doing a demo, say with voiceover, then you could hear the phone through the mixer, if you like, as well. That's probably not the best explanation, but I think you'll get the gist. This recorder takes two AA batteries, which you insert underneath. So you just flip it over and press down on the battery compartment lid, and there is a little space inside there for your two batteries, and pop the lid back on and you're sorted. In the menu, you can choose whether you're using rechargeable batteries or whether you're using alkaline batteries. So you do have that option in the menu. And the menu is pretty straightforward to navigate. It has your microphone settings. And obviously, the beauty of this recorder is that when you turn it on for the very first time, it asks you if you want to have voice guide on or off. It's by default, it's on. And this is the really good thing about these Zoom recorders with accessibility, is that they've been produced so that you have to turn off the speech if you don't want that. But of course, a lot of blind and visually impaired people are finding these recorders really good to work with now there are accessibility features in them. The only thing with this recorder, like all the accessible Zoom recorders at the moment, is that the list of files that you record do not speak on the PodTrack itself. So your safest bet is to actually connect the PodTrack to your PC and take the files when you're finished with them. You take them off your PodTrack and, you know, store them somewhere on your PC, and then your SD card is then free to use again. That's what I tend to do, because if you have a great big list of files, they're all numbered by date, and it can be a faff to find them, to be honest. So at the moment, this is the workaround, is to connect your Zoom recorder, whatever it may be, to your PC, and then find the files inside the Zoom recorder and copy those or cut them and put them somewhere safe on your PC. And that's obviously the safest way. Then, of course, you do have your files. You've got them safe and sound, hopefully, and you can go back to using the recorder, no bother. I hope this has been useful. If you want any further information, contact zoom-corp.com. That's zoom-corp.com. There is a lot of user guide material on their website for this recorder and all the other ones that are accessible. In fact, Zoom has made a document, a Word document, which really explains the layout of this recorder and all the other ones that are accessible. So the H series, the Essential series, also has all these documents, and you can find that on their website as well. So if you are looking to purchase one of these recorders, I think they cost round about £170. It depends, you know, where you go. I got mine from our friends online at Amazon, but you can buy direct from Zoom, and there are lots of other outlets as well that will sell them. But it is a really, really nice portable recorder. You can take it around. There is a little carry case that you can buy for it, like a clamshell carry case. And as I say, the only thing is that you would need your own headphones and you would need a microphone, because this recorder doesn't have a built-in microphone with it. So you would need to buy something. Perhaps you've already got something and you're using it for something else. And if that's the case, then you should be able to plug it in no problem. But it doesn't come with an internal speaker or a microphone. So just be aware of that. Okay, thanks for listening.
The popular accessible technology fair Site Village makes its way to Glasgow in March. Here to tell us more from organisers QAC is Rose Woodall, Site Village Events Manager. Rose, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello.
Well, what can we expect from Site Village Glasgow on Tuesday the 17th of March? Who will be there?
Wow, we're really excited to be going back to Glasgow. We went back last year and it was popular, so we thought we'd go back this year. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it. We've got a range of exhibitors. So just to name a few, we've got ATW Solutions, Humanware Europe, RNIB Scotland, Macula Society and VisionAid Technology. That's just to name a few, but there's many more.
For people who may have heard all about Site Village exhibitions but never been to one before, what are they like?
It's an amazing event. It's everything's all under one roof. So you've got a range of organisations, charities, all different services, a range of technologies, products. So, yeah, all under one roof. You can come for the whole day. There's an area where there's refreshments. So, yeah, and we have big events, so you can come as groups, you can come on your own, you can pop in, pop out. It's just very flexible and a relaxed setting, to be fair.
Are there any products or services being displayed this year in Glasgow that you're especially interested in learning more about? Anything that hasn't been in a Site Village exhibition previously?
I'm not aware of new products until I get there, and then the displays just seem to get bigger, new technology, you know, we have new exhibitors. So yeah, I'm sort of surprised myself on the day to how big it sort of grows and what new stuff are out there. So it's good to come along. So people can come along, talk to exhibitors face to face. They can try the products. They can attend seminars where they listen about different products or services available. So, yeah. I'll recommend come along and see what it's all about.
And you mentioned the seminars, Rose. Do you know who will be speaking at those this year?
Well, again, I'm working on the seminars at the moment, but yeah, the room's filling up. So any information regarding updates on exhibitors or seminars will all be updated on the website. So you can visit our website to keep up to date with all that, or you can give me a call. Whatever suits you, really.
The Glasgow Science Centre is a wonderful location for events like this. What kind of support will be available on the day for visitors?
Yeah, so we're in the process, well, I'm in the process of sorting out volunteers. So there'll be sighted guides on the day. And yeah, everyone's always happy to help should anyone need any help, whether it's just taking you to a certain exhibitor, directing you to the seminar room. Everyone is really friendly and always happy to help.
And tickets are free, of course, to all Site Village events, but you do recommend booking in advance. How can we do that?
Yeah, so you can go on the website, so www.qacsitevillage.org.uk. On there is all the information about the events, future events as well. And you can book your ticket. You can give me a call on 0121 803 5313.
Glasgow will be the first Site Village exhibition of the year, but you've got a very busy 2026 ahead, Rose. Where will Site Village be visiting this year?
So, yeah, we've got six events, like you mentioned, starting off with Glasgow. Then we're going to Exeter, so West Point Conference in Exeter. Then we're going to Leeds, so the Royal Armouries in Leeds. Then we'll have our two-day flagship Birmingham at Eastside Rooms. Then we're going the first time to North Wales, so we're going to Llandudno, a lovely event venue there, the arena. So we're sort of working alongside the North Wales Society for the Blind, and then we'll be back to London a little slightly earlier this year at the end of October.
And there are new ways to find out more information about those upcoming exhibitions as well.
The brochure is for 2026, going to be giving out all events. So the exhibitors have put adverts in there, things like that, and just loads of information about the dates of the events, getting involved, sponsorship, things like that. The same as the media pack relay. So they sort of the a little combo relay.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about those upcoming events later in the year. Site Village Glasgow will be at the Glasgow Science Centre on Tuesday the 17th of March between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. From QAC, Rose Woodall, Site Village Events Manager. Thanks very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you there.
And that is all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. If you've got any comments or anything you want to share, or if there's something we could help you out with, is there something we're not talking about that you think we should be? Any contributions are always welcome. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that all-important email address. We'll be back with you same time next week, but from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.